everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this episode is a DC Comics spotlight, kind of a state of the DC universe, if you will. But I guess you'd say an abbreviated state, because we're only going to talk about a couple of the big events that DC had going on leading into Rebirth. So specifically, we're going to be talking about the Darkseid War, which it lasted quite a while. I heard a few people saying they thought it dragged a little bit. I didn't think so. I felt like it was just kind of a big story, and it kind of needed the room, which kind of contrasts to The Last Days of Superman, which was an 8-part story that took place in the Superman family of books, and I felt like that story could have used more room. So it's a good contrast that, you know, Peter J. Tomasi is trying to tell this story, but I feel like maybe, he, you know, because he didn't have enough space, it seemed choppy at points. And so I'm glad, personally, that the Darkseid War was so long. Now, granted, it would have been nice if there weren't any delays. The last couple issues took a while, and it's understandably so, because there's big, giant splash pages and epic battles and a lot of characters, and Jason Fabok's art is amazing, and so I can understand why it would have taken him a little bit longer. So I didn't necessarily feel that the story was too long as far as the number of issues, but it did take a long time for the whole story to play out in real time, you know, just waiting for the issues to be released. What do you think, Manny? Agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't help that there was a couple of months where you got two issues, where it was like almost back-to-back weeks when you got a Justice League book, just because they were still trying to keep up with with the monthly. You would get one, I think it was in January and February, they got one at the end of January, and then boom, the next week, and you got another one. And then also the one-shots kind of, I felt that's where I felt like it really got long. Yeah, those last two issues, especially the last one, I mean, there's just so much to look at, so many really big splash pages that you can tell took a lot of time. I mean, Jason Fabok even went on Twitter and said that he was working really, really hard, and yeah, it's like that it took him an entire week, I think, to do a few of those pages. And so, understandably, with how big the event was, I'm glad they took their time with it, but came out and said this is why, and that it wasn't like a long layover, kind of like Dark Knight Returns is right now, the Master Race, where I pretty much almost lost interest in that series. And as far as Superman: The Last Days, I thought that was really quick. I thought it was going to take me a little bit longer to get through it, but it didn't take me very long at all. And you're right, it didn't have a lot of details, and it kind of just went through the motions to get to the death of Superman. But I thought it was still enjoyable, especially, the relationships he had with Batman and, Wonder Woman. So that one actually I didn't get to read as it came out, so I was not really too familiar with how far apart all the issues were.
Yeah, I agree with everything that you just said. So let's.
Please to note, this is no ordinary comic book. It is in permanent condition. If you spill soda on it, drops fly off harmlessly onto lesser comics.
Oh.
Yes, you are quite correct to gasp.
Yeah, so let's get into the comics themselves. Which story you want to talk about first? Darkseid War or Last Days of Superman?
Doesn't really matter. I guess Darkseid War, just because it's been a little farther behind.
All right. So this series mainly took place in the pages of the Justice League title. So Jeff Johns was the writer for that, and Jason Fabok was the artist for most of the series. Francis Manapul did fill in on a few of the issues. I thought the Fabok art was handled very well. his art definitely has a distinctive feel. Clean lines, reminds me, as far as line and detail, of Jim Lee, but his style, as far as layouts and rendering, is completely his own. In that way, it doesn't remind me of Jim Lee at all. Now, Fabok is probably, if you had to pick one artist as a favorite, it's probably Jason Fabok for you, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've said it since he was on Detective. I love some of those covers that and some of the layouts in those books. I think I remember telling you about two or three years ago, whatever, that one of my favorite covers wasn't even a super necessarily a hero. It was one of Jim Gordon that I thought was done so well, so detail was so good. And then also the Forever Evil, not Forever Evil, I'm sorry, the Villains covers that they did. He did this Poison Ivy that I was drawn to immediately. So when he started, and every time we do our yearly review, I think the last 2 years I've had him as my hands down favorite artist. And, I mean, for me, I know it's kind of, I should probably get somebody else this year, but it's probably looking like he's going to be my top artist again for this year. Just because of some of those pages you have these entities there, like Darkseid, like the Anti-Monitor, and then you still have to somehow fit the characters like Wonder Woman, Superman, Batman, Grail, Kalibak. I mean, and you still have to put parademons in it. I mean, there was just so much to look at, and the scale that it was done, I thought it was done really well, and I don't know. I just feel that the amount of work that went into some of those were ridiculous. Especially, I think one of my favorites has to be Justice League on one side and then the Crime Syndicate on the other, and they're kind of trying to figure out what they're going to do. I think that's 48 or 47, one of the two.
Is that the issue where it starts? Is that the issue where it starts out? The very first panel is the kind of the negative Superman, the black and white looking Superman, where he's holding the kryptonite, and then the next page is
Oh yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, I agree. I completely agree with you. It's completely different from anyone else. I feel that it's he has its own signature, I guess you can, or fingerprint, where if you put it on a wall next to a couple of other artists similar, I can still distinctly tell the difference.
Yeah, just for the record, that is issue 48.
Okay, I was right. Yes.
Yeah, he definitely excels at, much like George Perez, he excels at pages where there's a lot of characters. And in a way, in that way, his art reminds me of George Perez. That same kind of clean, classic book, classic comic book feel. But again, his style, his rendering, just the look of his characters, it is unmistakably his own. It doesn't remind me of another artist at all. So one of these days we're going to have Jason on the show, and we'll definitely have to talk to him about influences and where he gets his style from. So I'm going to go down the list just quickly. Because as Manny said, there were a lot of tie-ins. So the main title, as we said, Justice League, the main place where the story took place. But there were also a series of one-shots. So the basic premise of the story is there was the number one assassin of the Amazons way back when. And somehow, we're not privy to how, somehow she became impregnated by Darkseid. So she's giving birth on the same night Wonder Woman is being born on the island of Themyscira. And because this person, her name is Marina, because she is this assassin and kind of a unknown or mysterious, not widely known identity person, that she even exists being this assassin of the Amazons, She takes it upon herself to disappear because she knows if the Amazons find out that has given birth to Darkseid's child, that they'll destroy the child. She names the child Grail, and apparently the whole reason that she let herself be impregnated by Darkseid was because her job as the foremost assassin of the Amazons is to bring peace to the world, to the universe. And she thinks that in order to do this, she needs to destroy Darkseid. And she thinks the only way to destroy Darkseid is to have a child who's sired by Darkseid, so that the child will be powerful enough to destroy Darkseid. So that's kind of the back history. So as Grail grows up and learns from her mother, she discovers that the only way to kill Darkseid is to bring him in conflict with the Anti-Monitor, that classic DC villain, the whole reason that the Crisis on Infinite Earths happened, created by Marv Wolfman in that classic miniseries from the mid-80s. So we come to find out that the Anti-Monitor is a being named Mobius, the same Mobius of the Mobius chair that Metron of the New Gods has used for a millennia to find all the answers to the universe as he observes what's going on. So Mobius, trying to discover the secrets of the universe, is fused with the anti-life equation. That mysterious equation, power, energy, whatever you want to call it, that Darkseid has been searching for himself for a long, long time. So these things come to pass. Grail is able to start a war between the Anti-Monitor and Darkseid. The Anti-Monitor manages to destroy Darkseid. And his whole reason for doing this is, at the moment of Darkseid's death, the bonds between humans and gods, or mortal beings and gods, is weakened. And so the Anti-Monitor does this. He kills Darkseid because he is suffering and has been suffering for eons because he has been fused with the anti-life equation. And at that moment of Darkseid's death, he's able to separate himself and end his suffering. He's still alive, he's still evil, but he's no longer possessed by the anti-life equation. So at that moment, when Darkseid dies, Darkseid's power is unleashed, and a lot of the different powers of Darkseid go into different members of the Justice League. So, as I said, the main story plays out in the Justice League title, but there's a series of one-shots. And I think originally they were supposed to be called something else. Do you remember what they were going to be called, Manny?
No, I don't.
I want to say Gods and Monsters, but I know that was the kind of the little YouTube animated series they did. But anyway, they were originally going to be called something else, Gods and Men or something. I'm not really sure. But they ended up changing the one-shot titles to Darkseid War when the pre-orders came in, because they wanted to make it more obvious that they tied into the Darkseid War, because I think a lot of people were not realizing they were based on the title. So they changed them all. All the one-shots are now titled Justice League, Darkseid War, The Flash, or Justice League, Darkseid War, Superman, or what have you. So there's that series. And those one-shots basically tell the individual stories of the members of the Justice League that were fused with different powers of the gods. Just to kind of give some context and perspective. Now, if you're going back and reading the Darkseid War, these aren't necessary. Some of them are better than others. Some of them are good stories. Some of them are kind of eh. But as far as needing to know the whole story and wanting to read the Darkseid War, they're, like I said, they're kind of extra like back matter, even, you could say. So I'll go down the list real quick. There's Darkseid War Batman, Darkseid War The Flash, Darkseid War Superman, Darkseid War Green Lantern, Darkseid War Shazam, and Darkseid War Lex Luthor. There is one other one-shot. There was a DC Comics Presents Darkseid War 100-page spectacular, and that kind of tells the history of Grail. That one-shot, I feel, is adds a lot more to the story than the various hero one-shots. Would you agree with that, Manny?
Yeah, completely. It gives you a lot of perspective on why she's doing what she's doing. I agree with you there.
Yeah, so I think you could get away without reading DC Comics Presents Darkseid War 100-page spectacular, and you you know, you just, and as reading the story, Grail's just going to seem much more like a mustache twirling villain, which is fine. You know, it's not 100% necessary, but I do feel that if you read that particular one shot, you're going to get more out of the story. Cause like Manny said, it really fleshes out, just the reasons and her motivations and her history and such. So, as I said, for the majority, well, the entire story is Geoff Johns writing, and the majority of the pencil art is handled by Jason Fabok, and Francis Manapul fills in on some. The Dark Side War special, the one that tells Grail's origin, again, Geoff Johns the writer. It has Oscar Jimenez Garrido pencils, Paul Peltier pencils, and Yvonne Reese pencils. And I'm going to go through the one-shots real fast. The Dark Side War Batman is Peter J. Tomasi. The pencils are by Fernando Passerin. The Dark Side War Flash is written by Rob Williams with pencils by Jesus Moreno. The Dark Side War Green Lantern was written by Tom King with art by Doc Shaner. The Dark Side War Lex Luthor was written by Francis Manapul, and the pencils were by Bong Tai Dazzo. The Dark Side War Shazam was written by Steve Orlando with pencils by Scott Collins. The Dark Side War Superman was written by Francis Manapul, again with pencils by Bong Tai Dazzo. So, as I said, I don't necessarily feel that those are mandatory reading to understand the story, but some of them are better than others, as I said. I really enjoyed the Green Lantern one that was written by Tom King. Also, I thought the Flash one was particularly good. Probably my least favorite was the Lex Luthor. It just kind of felt like meh. And the Shazam one was just kind of okay, too. The Batman one was pretty good as well. How did you feel, Manny? Where did they all shake out for you?
Well, I didn't get to read a lot of them because I accidentally didn't pre-order them. I did read the Lex Luthor one, and I agree with you. It was kind of flat. But I like the Batman one. Just to kind of... I like that I got to know the chair a little bit more to understand what it was doing to him. And so I thought that was pretty cool. Then the contrast with him and Jim Gordon in the episode was the issue. I apologize. It was really good because he was stopping criminals before they even committed the crimes. And obviously in our justice system, that doesn't work. So, I thought that one was pretty cool. Other than that, I didn't get to read any of the other ones. The Flash one I did want to read because I wanted to know a little bit more about him being Death, but to this day, I still haven't got a chance to read that.
Yeah, the Flash one is kind of interesting in that he, like the other ones are mainly, as I said, some of these heroes of the Justice League being fused with parts of Darkseid's power and becoming kind of a new version of new gods themselves. The Flash is different. He doesn't get any power of Darkseid. He actually is fused with the Black Racer, who is kind of Darkseid's angel of death, if you will. So that one is a little bit different, but definitely a good read. It's kind of interesting in that when Fabok and Johns, you know, announced this big universe or this incredibly big story, that they talked about how they could have done it as a big event, but they decided they wanted to make it important. They wanted to make it this big sprawling story, just a big story. But they were, instead of doing it as an event, they were going to do it as an event within the Justice League books. And so what's interesting about it is how little, even though it's this huge important story that you, as you read it, you could see if this were going on in the DC universe, you definitely should see reference and know that it affects other titles. But it doesn't, because DC decided they wanted to keep it contained within the Justice League books, which I understand. And it's cool from like a comic reader's point of view, as far as not having to buy a bunch of tie-ins and, you know, doing things like Marvel does where it's 1,000 titles and all the books are coming out. It's hard to keep straight. You pretty much just had to buy Justice League and then, you know, a few of the one-shots if you wanted. But what's interesting is how big of a story it is and the fact that it's not really referenced until it's over. in some of the other books. So I found that to be interesting. But again, not it doesn't bother me. You know, it doesn't bother me that Batman is Bruce Wayne this entire story, while over in the Batman title, you know, Bruce Wayne was dead for a long time, and then even when he came back, it was Jim Gordon as Batman. It doesn't bother. I mean, I can see that one. You know, this story takes place before, you know, that the whole Joker Endgame thing or whatever. I'm totally fine with that. Just, you know, just tell a good story. So it is a big sprawling story. Johns is definitely playing with some big ideas as far as setting things up for the future. Even in this series, we this is where it talks a little bit about how there's three Jokers, because this story definitely ends, and it even says to be continued in the pages of Rebirth. So it also makes you wonder, how much did Jeff know about his plans for Rebirth when he started telling this? You know, there's talk of him planting little Easter eggs about Rebirth in his Superman run that he basically finished up right before he started doing this story in Justice League. So it all ties together. You know, we learn that Wonder Woman, Diana, has a twin brother, which, you know, was also referenced in the end of this story. So, and then there's a little epilogue, too, with the Owlman and Metron that definitely could tie in with Rebirth. So it's really cool that Johns is planting these ideas and moving around these big heroes. I mean, for a long time, the Anti-Monitor has been kind of the boogeyman of the DC universe, used extremely sparingly, and we had no idea who he actually was or what his origin is. And there's more that can be told there. But the fact that Darkseid has been destroyed, and then throughout the story, I don't want to spoil everything, but throughout the story, he returns, and then he kind of doesn't completely go away again, but it should be a while before we see him as this incredibly powerful villain going forward. So, yeah, a really big story. There's a lot to it. I've only read the entire thing once, kind of as it came out. I mean, I kind of was reading it, like, the first half of it, like, right as it came out. Like, I think I read, like, the first maybe four issues. And then I waited a while till a few more of the issues came out, and then I read those together, and then I waited till all the one-shots came out, and then I read those together, and it wasn't until very recently that I read, like, the last three issues. So I think even for me, if I sit down and I read it start to finish, like, with everything, I'll probably get even more out of it again. But a really cool story. Very epic, as I've come to expect from Jeff Johns. Cool things going on with Power Ring, Jessica Cruz. You know, we talked on the last Rebirth recap episode about how she's quickly become a favorite of the Comic Source crew over here. Very interested to learn more about her. Cool things with Steve Trevor. Wonder Woman is kind of the narrator of the story, so I feel like she gets a lot of play. Very interesting what he does with Batman and the Mobius chair and that whole thing. Great interaction with Bruce Wayne, Batman, and Green Lantern, Hal Jordan. Because if you go all the way back to Justice League number one, that's one of the things that Johns plays with right from the first issue. How he's created a dynamic between Bruce and Hal that's never existed before in the DC universe, with them kind of not necessarily liking each other and giving each other a lot of crap at the beginning. Batman basically thinking that Hal Jordan has this incredible weapon and he doesn't give enough respect. He's not serious enough about his role as a hero. And so it's interesting that this volume of the Justice League kind of bookends with that relationship and how it's changed over the years. So I found that very interesting. Things that happen with Superman that in this story that resonate in the last days of Superman that we're going to talk about here in a couple minutes. Consequences for that. I definitely feel like, and this is an interesting feeling that I have. Let's see if you agree, Manny, that the new 52 Superman in the pages of the Justice League feels more like the classic regal, noble, experienced Superman than the Superman that is in the Superman books. He comes across a little less experienced to me.
I got that sense. I think when I got that sense is after he got he went back to being normal Superman, and they were on the offensive. He said, "We were never gods." I think that's for whatever reason, when he said that, it kind of resonated with me as more of a classic Superman, humble, and jumping into action. So yeah, I agree with you there.
All right. Well, you have any other thoughts? I've rambled on quite a bit about my thoughts on Darkseid War. What do you have?
You know, for everything that New 52 was, it was going to end obviously with Rebirth, and for all of the negatives you can take out of it, I think this is definitely one of the best things I will ever take out of it would be the Darkseid War. I mean, because it spans from Forever Evil. That's really where it starts with the crime syndicate and them getting caught and Superwoman being pregnant. Anti-Monitor destroying their universe, and then we wait a while and finally come to learn that it's all been a plot the whole time. But it's interesting the way you mentioned it. How far long ago did Geoff Johns know about Rebirth that they were going to do this? Because it's almost like he's had it planned for a while.
Yeah, and Forever Evil was what, like 2011 or something? Maybe not that far. It seems like it was an awful long time ago.
It does seem like it's a long, long time ago. We've had Convergence since then, which was really weak, and to be
I guess Forever Evil was only 2013. Seems like 2013 to 2014. It just seems like it was a lot longer ago than that.
No, yeah. And then we also understand a little bit more of Alexander Luthor and his role here, even though he's not physically there. You have so many things sprouting out of it. The Wonder Woman, her mission about her brother. You have Jessica Cruz as the new Green Lantern. You talked briefly about Batman and the Joker. That's gonna spread out, and then obviously the direct tie-in with Rebirth at the epilogue with Metron and Owlman. There's just so much going on, and it could have easily got really confusing, but I thought it was done really, really well. It almost got to that line where it was borderline going to get confusing to me, and to have a really good story. But Geoff Johns as a writer is so strong that he just did a really good job at containing every part of the grand story and weaving it all together into what became the Darkseid War. And now, because of that story, we have so many other things sprouting out of it, and now he takes a back seat and lets these other great writers take control, take the wheel of these other characters and see where they go from there, and getting back to legacy. So for me, this is going to be one of my top arcs, probably, that I'll talk to my kids later, or if anybody wants to ask what's my favorite, it's going to have to be here, just because of how grand it is and what it meant to the DC universe and heading into Rebirth, which so far has been wildly successful.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I mean, I think that you could have a great big omnibus that starts with Forever Evil, including all those tie-ins, because that was much more of the for lack of a better term, Marvel kind of event, where it spilled over into all these one-shots and crossed over into some of the regular titles. And start there and go build all the way up through and contain all the one-shots or whatever and have it all in a big, you know, 1,000-page omnibus. And I think it's going to stand the test of time. It'll you know, much like Crisis on Infinite Earths does. And I think if DC had done Darkseid War like they did Forever Evil, I think maybe the reason they didn't is because they were worried about a repeat of the delays with Forever Evil and having to push other books back because they didn't want to spoil the story and then more things get out of whack. So I have a feeling that's why they did that. But if they were to have done Darkseid War as more of an event that affected other titles, which it easily could have, then I think even in scope for the DC Universe, that this Darkseid War story would rival Crisis on Infinite Earths in its importance. But because it's self-contained, it made it more manageable, and it does lessen kind of the impact of the story a little bit, but I don't think it does anything to lessen the importance of the story, because again, like you said, you know, you wonder how long John's had the seeds of Rebirth in his mind, because, you know, 2013, you know, it's 3 years ago, but yeah, the seeds of Rebirth are really there in Forever Evil, with this, you know, the beginnings of this story. So really, really interesting. Definitely gets a pretty high recommendation from me.
I find that the way they did it is actually pretty smart. For example, Last Days of Superman, one of the reasons why he's sick, one of the three reasons is the his battle with Darkseid and the Anti-Monitor. So I was like, oh, okay, that's when it happened. It happened before this. And some of the other titles too, they kind of just briefly mention it afterwards, like you said, just so they wouldn't get any further delays, or, you know, having one book come before another when it shouldn't, things like that. The fact that it's just even referenced later, I thought was extra for me to even make me more comfortable, because I wasn't necessarily thinking about the fact that Bruce Wayne was Batman when I'm reading the Batman title, and it's actually Jim Gordon. Same thing with Hal Jordan. I'm also reading him being not being necessarily the Green Lantern, but Hal having the gauntlet. Sorry?
I said Hal Jordan Renegade.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He had the gauntlet, not necessarily his ring, and he's actually a criminal. So a lot of things going on, but it was done really well, and it's kind of I see it more as a beacon of light for all these titles now. I think maybe they got a really a wake up call with some of the things that they did wrong with New 52, and this was their way of fixing it, kind of as they've mentioned too. But it's great see it in the pages of the books.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, let's move on and talk about the final days of Superman. This was an 8-part story. It took place in the pages of Action Comics, Superman, Batman, Superman, and Superman Wonder Woman. So the entire story, Peter J. Tomasi was the writer, and he worked with the regular artists on each particular title, with the exception of the Superman book that had been penciled by John Romita Jr. Most recently, but with him moving over to work on the Dark Knight Master Race, Mikael Janine from Grayson most recently was the penciler for the two Superman issues. Both Superman Wonder Woman issues were penciled by Ed Bennis. The two Action Comics issues, one of them was penciled by Dale Eaglesham and Scott Eaton, and the other was by Paul Pelletier. Both Superman or Batman Superman issues were Doug Mankey. So the art, for the most part, throughout all the issues is pretty good. I would say above average. But for me, the Mikael Janine art stands kind of above the rest, just slightly. Maybe it's just because I'm such a huge Mikhail Janin fan, but getting to see him draw Superman was really awesome. So the story itself is basically the New 52 Superman. He's kind of been through the ringer. You know, he lost his powers. We know that with during the Jean Luang Yang story. And he did various things to try to jumpstart them, supercharged himself up, irradiated himself with kryptonite. We saw him in the pages of the Dark Side War that we just talked about, going into one of the fire pits of Apocalypse, because they're solar powered, supposedly, to charge himself up. And basically all of these things that he's done in the past year or so in the comics have kind of coalesced into this... the fact that he's dying, his body has been used up, and he learns in the first issue, which I believe is Superman 51, the first issue of the story arc, that he's dying, and there's not really anything he can do about it, and the story goes from there. So yeah, 8 issues, which you think would be enough time to tell the story of Superman dying, which again I think it would have been if they hadn't added so many other things in. And I think the reason they did that was because they did kind of want to tie it into what was going to happen with Rebirth and kind of hook people. Oh, I want to know what happens next or whatever. So there's issues where Superman goes with Batman and Wonder Woman to China, kind of to hook people in for the new Superman title that Jean Yang's going to be writing. There's also some things that go on as far as introducing the pre-Flashpoint Superman, who, along with his son John and Lois from that version of the DC Universe, they've been appearing in the pages of the Lois and Clark title that Dan Jurgens has been writing. So there's things going on there. But basically what happens is because Peter J. Tomasi squeezes so much in, like Manny and I both mentioned, the story just felt rushed. It felt a little choppy. It would have been nice if it just could have been focused on Superman knowing he's going to die and the kind of the main villain or antagonist of the story, which is a guy who I think he was on parole, but he wasn't like checking in with his parole officer, which was never really explained. And in fact, when there's a point in the story where right at the end where Superman mentions who he is, who the guy is, and I had to go back to the previous issue and comb through it a couple times and be like, wait, when did they find out who he was? Wait, how did that go down? Because it happened so quickly that I almost missed it the first time. There's one moment where... And so basically this guy, again, we're not exactly sure how, but somehow he comes into possession of some Superman-like powers, believes himself to be Superman, but kind of like a solar-powered battery Superman, where his powers seem to be almost energy-based. And so I guess it has something to do with the solar flare power that Geoff Johns introduced to Superman recently in his run on the title. So there's one point where he exhausts that power and kind of comes back to himself very briefly, and in that moment he informs Wonder Woman and Superman who he actually is. But then his powers return and they kind of take him over, so... I just felt like the story could have used more room to kind of flesh out who he was and why he was doing what he was doing and how he came to possess the power of Superman. I mean, we know how, we see it happen, but it's not never really explained. Like, we see the actual event, but we don't really understand how. At least I didn't. And so, I really feel like that would have made the story stronger. But again, I understand why they threw all the other stuff in, just to kind of tie it into the Rebirth going forward. But being that it was like the last days of Superman, the end, the death of the new 52 Superman, I feel like it should have been a little more impactful. I mean, his death was noble and it was a little bit emotional, but it probably wasn't to the level it should have been. And I just feel that it was mostly because the story just didn't have enough room to breathe. So there really isn't that much more for me to say about it, because like Manny said, It didn't take him as long to read it as he expected, being that he waited to read it until all 8 issues came out and read it all together. You hear 8 issues, the death of Superman, you expect it to be, you know, much more of a big, sprawling story. And really, it's not. So while I think it's worth reading, it was a bit underwhelming for me.
I kind of feel like it's incomplete. I got the feeling mostly when I was reading the section when they go to China to figure out what's going on over there. And they learn that they're creating a new Superman, but they just kind of leave it alone. I thought that needed a little bit more clarification and a little bit more detail into it, because for one, I know that the Batman, I know he wouldn't allow that. Superman is his friend, but if you're going to have another Superman on Earth that somebody is creating, pretty sure you're going to have a problem with it, no matter where on Earth it's being created.
Yeah, but again, I think that's probably going to be played out in the pages of the new Superman title. I think we'll learn.
Yeah, I just wonder how far back they're going to go, because it was kind of, they just showed up, they kind of looked around, and they left. And then also, not that I needed too much more, but I felt that the responsibility that he was handing over to Kara was kind of rushed too. It was like, hey, I'm going to die, and I'm going to need you to take care of a lot of things. And I thought that felt rushed also. Definitely I think that it should have gotten maybe a little bit more publicity or a little bit more importance to the death of Superman, because I mean, even if it's the new 52 Superman that we kind of wanted to, they kind of wanted to get rid of to make room for the pre-Flashpoint Superman, it's still Superman. There's a level of respect I think that should have been emphasized with his death. And I think I didn't think they did that very well. It almost felt kind of, they just had to do it to reestablish the Superman that most people wanted in the books. So, I think that, yeah, it's definitely worth the read. But I think, not as good as I expected it to be. For a death of Superman story.
Well, let me ask you this: you've you know, we've been reading every DC Rebirth title that's been coming out, keeping up on it, and even though you're not typically a Superman fan, you've really said that you've really enjoyed what they've been doing with Superman so far in Rebirth. You know, surprisingly so, in your opinion, and you're totally hooked on where it's going to go from here. So. Do you feel like if you were to have, or for maybe someone who hasn't read The Last Days of Superman, but is enjoying the new, or enjoying the Rebirth Superman, what's come out so far, but hasn't read The Last Days of Superman, do you think they should go back and read this? Do you think it, well, it's two questions really. Do you think it's necessary to go back and read this Last Days of Superman story to be able to get more out of what's going on? Because you hadn't read Last Days of Superman, but you were already enjoying Rebirth Superman stuff that's been coming out. So do you think they should go back and read it, or do you think they need to go back and read it?
With the way that the Rebirth book started, I think that you should go, you don't need to, but you should go back and read it just to get a little bit of clarification of why that Superman's dead, and who, I mean, you should, to be honest, you should go back and even as far as reading the adventures of Lois and Clark, to really get why Superman starts off wearing his black costume, and why all of a sudden is, you know, do they live on a farm with the married with Jonathan, I don't feel like you need it, because I kind of had an idea of what had happened.
Yeah, they do a good job.
I guess
recapping.
That's a little bit different.
Yeah, they do a good.
So,
I was just gonna say they do a good job of recapping in that Superman Rebirth where they're checking to see if Superman, the pre-Flashpoint Superman, is checking to see if there's a way to, you know, that the pre-Flashpoint Superman, having survived death from his battle with Doomsday by using the Kryptonian regeneration matrix. And so he takes it upon himself to try to see if he can revive this Superman, the new 52 Superman, with the same regeneration matrix. And so that in that story, they do a good job of kind of recapping what's happened. So I kind of agree with you. I don't think you necessarily should read it. But like you said, I think you get a lot more out of it if you do read this Last Days of Superman story. And it's a quick read. So, and I'm sure they'll probably collect it in trade. So
yeah, I mean, you can just go back. If you want to go back and read it, I thought that it was a little... I liked the way I kind of got a little bit of clarification from the things that were going on in Rebirth. And then also, I mean, if you're going to have questions about how China Superman came to be, and this kind of gives you a little bit more of a light of how that started as well. So overall, it's not necessary, but... It just helps overall. If you're enjoying Superman as much as I have been, then it's nice to get a little bit more information going forward.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I would say the one other thing that you should read, if you're hooked on Rebirth, if you're listening to this podcast, you found us through our Rebirth coverage, and you kind of want to know how things shaked out or shook out the way they did with kind of the state of things with Rebirth going forward, I'd say reading Last Days of Superman, reading Darkseid War are a good place to start. I don't think you necessarily need to read Flash or the Green Lantern Corps of titles just because it is so different. Like with Manny saying Hal Jordan's kind of a criminal, it kind of shifts back away from that. I don't know that that's necessary. But one other storyline that I think is necessary is to read Joker Endgame to know why Jim Gordon was Batman, and then to read the Jim Gordon as Batman thing, the Mr. Bloom storyline. I think that's important because it's referenced in the Batman Rebirth stuff with how Bruce Wayne is and why he is a better Batman than he ever could possibly have been before. So I think if you read those stories, you'll definitely have a good grasp on the current state of the DC Universe moving into Rebirth. So check out Last Days of Superman, definitely read Darkseid War, and the Mr. Bloom, the end of Joker Endgame, like the last two issues, I'd say, if you don't want to read the whole thing, and then the Mr. Bloom storyline, for sure.
Anything else? I agree with you there.
Anything other titles you think they should read to kind of have a grasp of the state of the DC Universe right now?
Well, following up on what you said on Batman, I remember when Jim Gordon was saying that when he realized that Batman couldn't work within the justice system, he had to be his own entity. And that's those few pages, I think, was where they were solidifying that there was only one Batman and only one person could be Batman. But, I mean, if you really want to go in depth on the state of the DC Universe, after you read Endgame, also, if you're reading Endgame, Batman... because it seems that he's going to have a presence in the Batman series now, I would definitely suggest to pick up We Are Robin to get a little bit more about Duke and his role as a, I guess, Batman's new sidekick.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you're specifically interested in Batman, I would agree with that.
That's kind of where I'm. Yeah. It's not necessary, but if you're really into Batman, that's something you're probably going to want to read understand who he is and where he came from. But yeah, he starts off in Endgame, so.
Yeah, agree 100%. But really, if you want to jump into the DC Universe, now is the perfect time. Jump in with these Rebirth titles. You don't need to go back and read anything that came before. This is a perfect jumping on point. And so the next time we do one of these State of the DC Universe episodes, it'll probably be once all the Rebirth stuff, the first few issues, or at least all the number ones and all the Rebirth one-shots have come out. And at that point, we probably won't even reference any of this stuff. Or if we do, it'll only be briefly because That's exactly what Rebirth is. It's a great jumping on point, linking the past with where the architect of the DC Universe, Geoff Johns, wants to take things, working with the creative teams for the various books going forward. So, once again, we want to thank everyone for joining us. Please visit us at thecomicsourceblog.com for past episodes of the podcast. You can also watch episodes of our YouTube channel there. You can find Manny's written blog, which he does for Latino Review, as well as my written blog, which you can find on Sci-Fi for Me as well. And our sketch gallery is hosting on our website as well. A lot of cool sketches there. The best way to keep up with what's going on with The Comic Source is to follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/TheComicSource, or Facebook. Just do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook. That's us. And we're also on Instagram, which is where I post a lot of convention pictures when I'm at conventions. So with San Diego coming up in about a month, San Diego Comic-Con, if you want to keep up with what's going on at San Diego Comic-Con, all the interviews I'm going to be doing, and just see what's going on with this massive pop culture convention, you definitely want to follow us on Instagram. So once again, thanks for listening, everybody. We really appreciate the support, and we'll talk to you next time.
Later.